All right, welcome to Mentors Collective. We're doing the Chamonix series. I'm on a mastermind with my boy Kakoa. We spent the last week together in France, skiing, jamming, learning, networking, and talked a lot about kind of entrepreneurship, motivation, some of the crazy shit that all of us have been through in this journey that is entrepreneurship, which we all know is not a straight line. So I wanted to sit down with you, hear a little bit about your journey, the ups and downs, what you've gone through, and hopefully we can inspire some people listening and maybe even help them avoid some mistakes. So Kakoa, welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Yo, it's my pleasure. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? Who do you help?
Yeah, man. I mean, first of all, I want to thank you for having me on. I think this event out here in Chamonix has, I'm not sure if that's how you say it, but
Chamonix. I was calling it Chamonix up until day three.
Chamonix.
The French didn't like Merci. That very much.
Yeah,
dude. I didn't get that. Could you try again?
Oh, I was listening to that whole thing. That's crazy. Damn Siri.
So we were at we ordered food here, and everything in Europe, I think, is way slower than it is in the U.S. Every time I'm in New York, when I'm ordering a bagel, they're yelling at me from, you know, back at the line, 20 people back. They're like, yo, what's your order? What's your order? When we get to Europe, in France, we probably wait 20 minutes every single time from when the waitress or waiter hands us off to when we're actually served for the first time. And today, I think that's my biggest pet peeve. But other than that, Europe has been...
We're not used to that.
Europe People has just, been awesome.
They move slower. They're not in a rush.
Yeah.
Whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know. But I'm not used to it. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm a fast-paced guy.
Yeah.
I walk into a grocery store and people are slow. And I'll cut them off. I'll go around. Yeah. But you know, people in Europe overall apparently happier.
Yeah, I think... I was in Australia back in 2020.
Yeah.
And I was only there for 3 or 4 weeks, but the culture there is so, you know, it's so familial and like friendly oriented, right?
Yeah.
It's very much so friends and family come first, then it's your work. And I would see everyone get off from work at like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. They'd go to the coffee shop and it's very calm. And I think seeing that perspective sometimes is really helpful when it comes to entrepreneurship, right?
Right.
I think a lot of entrepreneurs and, you know, even myself, like now sometimes, right, it's almost trying to force things to happen.
Yeah.
And we're so quick, we're making this decision, the next decision, without ever thinking about it. And I think sometimes taking a step back, letting yourself rest, and then seeing, okay, what is the actual decision that's going to move the needle and get the business to the next level?
Yeah.
And I think these trips are really enlightening and really, you know, it's really powerful because you learn exactly how you can come into that realm.
Yeah, it's funny. You feel almost guilty going on trips like this.
Yes.
When you're in your business grinding day to day, you've got a million emails, a million tasks on your to-do list. And you're like, I shouldn't go on this trip. It's irresponsible.
I agree.
And then you get here and you do get a chance to kind of slow down and talk to guys who are hyper successful in their various fields about really high level stuff and about stuff that's a lot deeper than we get to experience in our day-to-day lives. And it's amazing, like the insights that you get that can change your business with one idea that you don't get when you're at home grinding in your emails. So I'd argue that it's irresponsible not to go when you have a chance to do something like this. Yeah. What do you think?
No, I mean, I wouldn't even say it's like irresponsible, but like you even bringing up the fact of this grind mentality, this hustle culture, right? And I think, you know, in order to build a great business, right, there's going to be days where it is a 12-hour, 14-hour, 16-hour work days, and it might be back-to-back for months.
Yeah,
right?
Especially
when you're starting. But at the end of the day, I think it comes to a point where responding to the emails, getting back to the Slack messages, doing all of these nitty-gritty day in the life, like just day in the, really just like in the weeds tasks,
right?
That's not what's going to move the needle. And I think it was from Eric. It was from Eric's speech. CEO or COO at Mindvalley.
Right.
They helped scale the team up quite a bit there, really grew that into a successful business. But his biggest thing was focus on the 3 chess moves, which will win you the game, right? It's not focused on the thousand different things. It's not focused on all the shiny different objects.
Yep.
It's focused on what three things will move that needle. And I think, you know, there's so many people that want to get the website right. There's so many people that want to get the logo right. They want to, you know, buy all the product before so they make sure it's perfect. Like, it's really just sell. Like, the only thing that you need to know how to do first is sell.
Right. Everything else is procrastination.
Yeah. It really is. Because if you can't sell, then it doesn't matter how good your product is because nobody's going
to
buy it.
Yeah. And you don't know if anyone wants it until you're out there trying to sell.
Right.
Crazy. Yeah. Right. No, Eric made some great points. A CEO of Mindvalley, multiple nine-figure company.
Yeah.
I think his talk for the point that I'm at with my company right now is really impactful. And you're right. One of the things that he said was every chess move should be is a strategy, and every strategy is a risk. So if it's not risky, you're not doing it right. And not only to have those higher level chess moves and how to come up with them, but how to stay focused on them. Yeah. So that you're actually prioritizing those on top of the things that don't matter, like perfecting your website.
Yeah.
So it's opportunities like this to sit down with people like Eric, people like yourself, and dissect your business and listen to what other people are doing to get those higher level chess moves, or else it's hard to figure out what they even are and where to start.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. And I think, you know, the faster you can understand, or anyone, right? The faster anyone can understand, hey, what are the two or three things that move the needle? You know, that's how you're ultimately going to keep growing your business or keep growing your income, right? We teach people how to become SDRs, right? We teach them how to train and get interviews with business owners and go in there. And at the end of the day, it comes down to what questions do you ask? Do you know the statistics? And do you know how to sell?
Right.
And I think it's with any business, right?
It's funny how similar businesses are. Just,
yeah. Right. like at the end of the day, a business is just, hey, what value can you provide?
Yeah.
And how do you sell it?
Your offer, your marketing, your team.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much overlap.
And I would agree with the team, but first it's how do you sell?
Yeah.
Right. Because I think so many people that just start out in this space, they're like, okay, I got to build the team, got to do all this, got to do all this. But then they never know how to sell. Right. And I think if you fix that one thing, everything else takes care of itself.
Yeah.
Because right? Then you have cash to play with.
Right. It's true. And it's funny, and it's almost nice to see so many different entrepreneurs in different verticals that you can learn a lot from, because there's so much overlap in business. Something that Kevin's doing in his nine-figure software business applies to us in our agency business. Totally different business models, but so much overlap and so much to learn from everybody. And it's awesome to see how far people have come in their entrepreneurial journey.
Right.
There's a lot of young guys here. There's 22-year-old. How old are you, Kiko?
I'm 23.
23. You're among the younger. I didn't even start business until I was several years older than that. And even then, I went through several iterations of failures before I was able to figure it out, just like I'm sure you did, just like most entrepreneurs do until they find one that fits, one that's that level of success. Maybe the SDR company is for you. Maybe it's not. That's to be said.
Right.
But what has been your experience with failures, with iterations, with picking yourself up after a failure? What's that been like?
I think failure is just part of the process.
Failure is learning.
Right.
If it's not learning, you're doing it wrong.
Right. And I mean, it's even learning from other people's failures or mistakes. But I think to really learn it, you have to fail.
Yeah.
And I know there's probably a few people that disagree with that. But I feel like, you know, people go do an MBA, they go to business school, they spend 6 years going through all this, but what do they not do? They don't build a business.
Yeah.
The best business school is building a fucking business.
Right. MBA teaches you to go work in someone else's business.
and I think there's so many wonderful things about college and MBAs and all this, but once again, if you want to get into entrepreneurship, if you want to get into this kind of new age that we're in,
yeah,
it's not really necessary. Because once again, what does it come back to? Just know how to sell.
Yeah.
And actually just try to start a business.
Yeah. Confidence and putting yourself out there.
Right.
And you mentioned something that I want to piggyback on, which is really learning lessons through failure. And this is a lesson they kind of taught this weekend too. It's the difference between learning something intellectually and learning something emotionally. And I'll compare it to my investing mistakes of 2020, 2021, where I lost $250,000. I knew intellectually from what I read, from YouTube videos, from my family, that I shouldn't have invested the way that I was investing. Sure. But it wasn't until I lost that money that I learned that same lesson emotionally.
Right.
And I wouldn't have learned unless that happened to me, unless I failed.
Right.
And same thing's to be said of business. You know, if you start something and it fails, you have a much different feeling in your heart than reading about someone's failure. Maybe even if they failed the exact same way.
100%. I think you can't learn without doing.
Right. Right.
And I also think, you know, a lot of these quote unquote failures aren't necessarily even failures, because it's a learning. Like, as long as you learn from it, then it's actually helping you build towards future success.
Yeah.
Right.
Tell me about your first businesses. What did you start? And what?
I actually had a YouTube channel back in 2014.
Nice.
Gaming channel. I was pretty nerdy. Still kind of am about data. But it was a gaming channel, Destiny. Played Call of Duty for a lot. And my parents didn't like me playing video games.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh, you have to figure out a way to, you know, do something else. Or, you know, and I literally had an hour time limit on the Xbox. I couldn't play for more than an hour. But what I soon realized is that, hey, if I can actually make money from these videos somehow, yep. or from playing video games, then maybe my parents will let me play video games longer than an hour.
Interesting. You had that intuition in 2014?
Yeah. That's and it didn't even stem from wanting to make money. It was because I love the game.
Yeah.
Right? Which I think actually relates a lot more to even today, right? Mm-hmm. I think the money is great, and it kind of gives you like a scoreboard, you know, in terms of like competition. But the game itself is what's really fun, right?
Yeah.
And it's the game of building, it's the game of failing, it's the game of doing all these things, right? And it comes from the love of it.
It does. I was just talking about kind of the same thing with Colin. And one of the fascinating topics is like, how much is enough money where it stops mattering how much money you make? Okay. And there's definitely less benefit to having more after a certain point. I'd say once you're making over $1 million, the amount of things that you can't do is so fractional. Like, maybe you can't buy a super yacht, maybe you can't buy a jet, maybe you can't buy an island, but you can travel as much as you want.
Yeah.
You can eat whatever you want, you can take as much time off as you want. There's nothing you really can't have.
Right. I mean, I truly think that numbers like the goal, you know, for many people, right, is to hit $1 million a year. It's to make a lot of money. It's to make even their first $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
But like the number that I think anyone can, you know, have an amazing life, they can still have investments, they can still do all these things, is $10,000 a month.
Yeah.
At $10,000 a month, you can do pretty much whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, as a single dude.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe after taxes, right, maybe you pay 30, 40K, but if you have your own LLC, you can expense a lot of things under the business, then you get more money to play with.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of that travel can be write-offs. A lot of the food, like, you can write off 100% of your food if it's for business conversations.
Yeah, right? It's true. The tax structure is interesting.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's completely legal.
Yeah. Right? It's funny. Last year, me and my business partner committed to only paying ourselves $10,000 per month. Everything else stayed in the business. That was going to buy our building, which was $3 million. So we needed quite a bit of cash.
Quite a bit of cash.
And I realized on that $10,000 per month that I was fine. I was still saving money with that $10,000 per month.
Yeah.
And it was paying a lot more taxes than that. Right. So it was probably more closer to like $7,000 or $8,000 a month.
Right.
Granted, I don't live a very luxurious lifestyle. I got a nice 2-bedroom, nice car, but nothing crazy.
Yeah.
But it's true. I had an awesome life on $10,000. So people's perspective on money when they see people in Lamborghinis and private jets.
Well, also Lamborghini, you can just put a lease on a Lamborghini. You can get a Lamborghini for like $4,000 a month.
Yeah.
Like,
you get one less
than that. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
like,
or you could buy one, Toro it out. You see people do that, or just rent one for some pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of those material things, they fade away fast.
Yeah.
And I think once again, kind of like business and kind of like failing with it, you have to go through and buy those things for you to understand, hey, there's not really that much meaning there.
Right. And that kind of goes to within the conversation of entrepreneur lifestyle on Instagram. And you and I are both kind of guilty of playing into that because, one, it's flashy, it's marketing, it gets attention, it gets people to your page.
But that thing sells. That's the thing.
It sells?
I think if you're posting with a fancy car.
Totally sells.
At a luxury hotel, first class flight, sells.
Yeah, it's sexy. It stops scrolling.
Yeah.
It says, who is this guy? What does he do?
Right.
It sparks curiosity.
Right.
But those things aren't relevant in your day-to-day life and your day-to-day happiness.
Of course not.
Yeah. That's a huge misconception. I think one of the things it is useful for when you're a junior entrepreneur, maybe you're interested in it and you're scrolling through and you see this stuff, I think jealousy is an interesting emotion when you're starting out. Like, I see all these guys traveling, driving their Lamborghinis. Why can't I have that? I want that. I'm going to go get it. I think that's a big like spark, big motivating factor for a lot of people. I also think for all of the people that it helps, it probably creates 20x the negative side effects on the psyche of people. What do you think?
The thoughts on jealousy?
Yeah, do you think, what do you think about Instagram entrepreneurship?
I think Instagram, I think there's two perspectives, right? And this is with anything in life. One of the guys, this is Kevin, right?
Yeah.
Owns a private jet, right?
Does he?
I could listen Boss. To that and be jealous, oh shit, he has a private jet, why don't I have a private jet?
Yeah.
Right? But the reality is he worked really fucking hard to get it, yeah. And that should be motivating.
Hell yeah.
Right? And I think our society has raised so many humans to be incredibly weak with that, right? I think the majority of people are extremely weak-minded, and with that comes jealousy. It comes envy. It comes pride. Mm-hmm. It comes ego. And all of these, you know, kids who killed it in high school, kids who killed it in their fraternity, girls that killed it in their sorority, and now are in the real world where none of that matters, it's a huge hit at the ego, right?
Yeah, no, 100%.
And I think it's so alarming to so many people to get into the real world. And at the end of the day, it kind of comes back to money, status, and power.
Yeah.
Right?
It does. Yeah, women are attracted to money, status, and power. Guys know that. They'll do whatever it takes to have that appearance that they have money, status, and power, whether or not it's true.
Right.
And no matter how they feel on the inside and day to day.
I agree.
Which is what you don't see.
I agree.
Yeah. So you're 23 years old. My question is, who pilled you and how early? Who gave you the entrepreneur pill where you became unemployable and needed to go out there and start building businesses?
I've never been good at following rules.
Yeah.
Right? And this kind of ties back to the jealousy thing because I kind of want to wrap on that point. But I think with the jealousy thing, it can either come from a place of, okay, I'm really motivated by this.
Right.
And I see these people doing so well. How can I do it too? And learning from that.
Yeah.
Right?
Healthy jealousy.
And that's the most respectable thing.
Yeah. I still get that.
I don't think it's even healthy jealousy. I think it's motivation. Like, wow, right. This guy crushed it, right? I'm going to do better.
Yeah. I think calling it jealousy might be doing yourself a disservice because I still get that feeling.
Sure.
And it's a good feeling. I love it. Yeah. Like, oh, that's why I love being in groups that are where there's guys like Kevin who are doing light years better than I am. And they might be a decade ahead of me. And I get to see that. And I'm not a hotshot in my little town anymore.
Right.
And it's like, oh, shit, I'm going to come back and next year on this trip.
I think it's so humbling.
It is.
Yeah. I think these trips are wonderful. And, like, for anyone looking to get into the business space, pay whatever the amount is mm-hmm. to whoever it is to get you in the right circles.
Right. It's amazing how much we don't still know.
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, the more you know, the more you realize how much you don't know.
Yeah. Same thing in medicine, man. The longer you study medicine, the more you realize how much we don't know about the system and the human body, and the more questions you start asking. Same thing goes with business. The more time I spend around big hitters learning, I'm like, oh man, I am still just a baby.
Yeah.
And you're a baby, but I'm still a baby. I mean, there's a lot of guys here like pushing 60, and they're just crushed it their whole life. We've been lucky enough to spend the week with Peter Sage, who's just a Goliath.
Right.
And it's just an honor to be able to network and learn from these people.
For sure.
Super cool. All right, tell me about your upbringing, your red pill entrepreneur starts.
I wouldn't say we're necessarily into the red pill. I've kind of
red pill's taken on a different context.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a lot of the guys in the space, very polarizing, and I prescribe to some of the things that are said, but also, I kind of have like a different take. Like, my goal with business is to help others, you know, believe in themselves more than they ever have before, right? My goal is to believe in that person more than they believe in themselves. Because I think the environment in which many kids are raised, you know, I was very lucky. My family is like a family of entrepreneurs. They came from this. They've always been really bad at following rules. I went to a Montessori school where it's very hands-on learning. You get to choose what you do. And through that, that's ultimately what allowed me to really understand what I enjoy, what I like, and that's numbers. And that's seeing, hey, we implement this ad copy and this ad creative, it goes viral. Why did that happen? How can we duplicate that? Right? That's what I love. That's what I'm really fucking good at, right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Same with you in PR.
Yeah.
You know exactly what, you know, hits in the news. You know exactly what gets a politician, a doctor, a lawyer. You know exactly how to get them featured. You know exactly how to, you know, make them this authority, mm-hmm. right?
No, 100%. And I think we're going to see a lot more people like you popping up with these innovative upbringings where you get to go to schools where it gives you a little bit more freedom of education. You had family who was entrepreneurs. That's awesome. I know you're Hawaiian. Did you get your beginning education in Hawaii?
No, it was actually in Texas.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
What was that like at the, what kind of school did you call it?
It was a Montessori.
A Montessori?
Yeah.
What is a Montessori?
So you go to the classroom, there's a lot of different things. They had something called the Golden Beads, the Pink Tower. They had this like line in the classroom. It was like a massive line. And you literally just walk in a circle in the classroom.
Uh-huh.
And like, it was so enlightening because you could just go do your own thing. And I think so many schools nowadays have kids doing a very rigid structure.
Oh, you have no idea.
Right? It's, hey, choose your major when you're a sophomore in high school so that when you go to college in 3 years, you're prepared to do this for the rest of your life. Like, do you think the majority of people are going to be in the, like, wanting to do the same exact thing? No. Right? And I think there is going to be this shift where higher education is going to be less emphasized.
I hope so, because the current educational system is broken. Just like you said, I know you're lucky enough.
I mean, it's a business.
Yeah, right? I think it's doing its job just fine.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, they're funneling people into jobs to make rich people richer.
Exactly. Like, the education system was created to create an economy of workers.
Yeah. Same thing for medical school.
Same thing for medical school.
The whole thing was created to make pharmaceutical companies richer. The amount of hours that we spent learning nutrition, forget about it.
It is.
Like 2 hours. It's disgusting. Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
Because what do they care about? Money.
Yeah.
Is it really nutrition? I mean, maybe a little bit, because you can write it off and be like, oh, yeah, this is nutritious, this is good. But I even see all the supplements not approved by the FDA. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because if the FDA probably checked them out, there would be too much stuff happening, and then they couldn't sell it at their markup.
That's a rabbit hole for another day. What about formal education? Did you do college, university?
I did, yeah. I went to Vanderbilt University, very good school.
Okay, awesome.
I think when I went, it was like ranked 14th in the nation of the United States.
I've heard of Vanderbilt.
Yeah. med
they've been around a while.
they've been around. And it was a very good school.
What'd you study? Right?
Business.
Cool. I'm interested that they took somebody from Vanderbilt's a very old school. Yeah. And you'd think that they had very like traditional values. They wanted grads from Ivy League or prep schools with straight A's. And I don't imagine you had very traditional grading.
Yeah, well, so in high school, I actually did go to, it actually wasn't a Montessori school anymore.
Gotcha.
It was like a more normal, like magnet school program.
Gotcha.
But it was also a very good high school.
Yeah.
Right? I would say I'm pretty intelligent. But also in comparison to my peers, I was still like bottom 50% in my high school, bottom 50% in Vanderbilt. And still, I mean, you're at a really good school and I get it. But like, school wasn't my priority. Mm-hmm. It was the business. And I think school taught me how to think. It taught me how to interact. You know, I had this really bad stutter for like 8 years and it got me out of that comfort zone. And mm-hmm. I'm very thankful for that. And I think it showed you how to interact with teams and groups, and it just puts you around a lot of people. But I think for the majority of people, I think if you're having to go into hundreds of thousands of dollars of student loans, you're taking on all this debt to get a degree where you may not have a job after, mm-hmm. it's really dangerous. It's really dangerous because at the end of the day, the school system is a business.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, the school system is there to make money for the people that run the school.
And you can't default on your student loans.
And you can't default on your student loans.
You pass those things on when
it's
you die.
Brilliant.
It's crazy.
If I were to start a new business, I'd start a fucking college. I'd start a university, right?
Well, hopefully not right now. I'm still banking on
I would start
on
a university. It's a fucking brilliant business model.
I hope it's all just disrupted in the next few years, but it is brilliant. They have been raking in money for the past decades.
I know. And from a business standpoint, it's very respectable.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
They're doing a good thing for the world. They're educating the next group. So you're 23 years old. You're probably 1 or 2 years out of college. What traits do you think that you have set you apart from your classmates? How are you able to generate so much more revenue than they are at this age?
I honestly think a lot of my classmates are way smarter than me.
I think a lot of my classmates are smarter than me. I make more money than them. Why?
I think it comes down to the different way of thinking. I think it comes down to, I've never been good at following rules. Mm-hmm. And it's generally the people that break the rules that create amazing things.
Right?
Because they think outside the box. Because they're not following the cookie cutter approach.
Right? Do you think that a lot of people think outside the box but are too scared or don't have enough confidence to execute on those thoughts and ideas? Because that's what I grapple with every day. Like, I can't be the only one thinking this. I just might be the only one either cocky or confident enough or stupid enough to actually leave medical school and go straight into business, whereas everyone else just kind of sits there in their prison of unhappiness day after day. Like, what do you think that is?
So, I think a lot of people actually enjoy their jobs. Like, I have a lot of friends that are actually in med school right now, and they love it.
Yeah.
Right?
Med school was awesome. Yeah. Practicing sucked.
Sure. And I would agree with that. I think a lot of students are going to realize that, but that's going to be in 5 years after they've already gone through 12 years of schooling, which is really sad. Right? And I also have a lot of friends that have already gone through consulting and investment banking jobs, because that was the fad thing to do. That was what everyone did.
Yep.
And they absolutely hate it. I haven't talked to one of my friends that likes their consulting or investment banking job.
No.
Like zero.
Same. My finance friends and my accounting friends.
Actually one. She's really fucking
smart.
She's
faking it.
No. She's actually really good at what she does. But and everyone is really good at what they do. But a lot of them don't like it. And I think a lot of people bought into and they prescribed to the exact thing that the schooling system is made to do. Mm-hmm. It's to build a group of, you know, very talented workers to help run these businesses, right? I was watching another podcast. I think this was with Luke Belmar and some other guy, but they're talking about BlackRock. Mm-hmm. And how BlackRock literally owns trillions of dollars of assets.
If you look into it, it's terrifying.
If you look into it, it's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Every building you walk down, right, on the street in the United States and in these big cities, Miami, New York, all these places, BlackRock owns them.
Yeah. You ever heard of their supercomputer? I think it's called Aladdin.
I have not.
Basically, Wall Street rents their supercomputer so that they can determine prices of stocks and options. Mm-hmm. BlackRock has a supercomputer AI that can determine price fluctuations and everything. So they're just, they print money with this thing.
Wow.
It's nuts. There's a documentary. Everyone has to watch it. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, the point of that conversation is like, it's kind of rigged.
I think it is rigged.
Yeah, it's kind of rigged.
If you can't win playing the game you're playing, then you got to stop playing that game and find a new one. And I think the majority of people will always keep playing the same game for the rest of life. Right. But my goal with business and everything that we do, and even talking with you on this podcast, thank you, is to hopefully shine a new light on the type of game that can be played. And that might be the game of business. It might be the game of getting into the online space, starting your own thing, learning sales, doing, you know, maybe even working with a business. But you're still getting paid for every single deal that you bring in. You're still able to pick up your bags and go to Europe, right? We're in Europe. We've been here for a week.
A whole week.
How many of your friends in med school are going to Europe?
None. They're right. In the hospital as we speak on right. a Saturday night.
Right. And I respect that. That's a grind.
God bless their hearts.
But I kind of like Chaminade.
I like Chaminade. I like the freedom to be able to do right. this. And the only people right. who can do this are entrepreneurs, which is why we got like 35 high-level guys yeah. that are awesome and now good friends that can come together and share their knowledge.
Agreed.
And grow together. Again, this is why it's rigged. I mean, how are you going to compete against us if you're not doing stuff like this?
Yeah. And I think a lot of people just have to be put into new situations that they've never experienced before.
Yeah, me too. Discomfort is where growth happens.
Exactly.
What do you think the solution is, the remedy to everybody being, I guess, a sheeple in a system that doesn't work and doesn't make them happy?
Well, I think a lot of people don't want everyone to ever get out of the system, right?
The people at the top don't. I mean,
of course not.
Of course not.
Right.
Yeah, and if you're speaking to the people in the system, how do you get out?
I think you just have to take the risk.
Yeah.
I think you're going to get burned, and that's part of it. And you're going to fail a lot, that's part of it.
Ridicule is part of it.
Yeah. And yeah, your friends, your family are like, what are you doing? That's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I lost a lot of friends
yeah,
over the
too.
Past few years. A lot. A lot of ridicule. A lot of hate, which I don't really understand. But a lot of hate.
It's the black sheep thing. If you do, yeah. if you're different, people don't like different.
Right.
They'll point and they'll say, look how different he is.
And I think it's coming from a place of love with it. And it's
yeah.
like, hey, okay. We don't see eye to eye and that's okay.
Yeah.
You can go play your game and I can play my game. And I think you part ways.
Yeah. And then eventually, you're not a black sheep, you're a diamond sheep. The black falls
yeah.
off and they're like, oh,
with
shit.
With all the other diamond sheeps.
Yeah. He's not different. He's crushing it.
And then you find your group.
Yeah.
I think finding the group, too, is the biggest thing. It's hard for me to be back in Texas. It's hard for me to be really anywhere. I feel like I spend so much time alone, you know,
yeah.
these days. I started dating a girl about a year ago. She's been incredible. We've grown together a lot, done a lot of good things.
They say entrepreneurship is lonely, and it's so true. Yeah. It's hard to have real friendships with people who aren't in this space because you just grow so far apart mentally that it's tough to talk about anything in between. I don't watch sports.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way?
100%.
Yeah. And that's why these things are so powerful. But
I agree. Everyone here, every conversation has been money, business, how to make more money, how to make your business better, and how to optimize your health, how to optimize your sleep, how to optimize your performance, and what does that lead back to? More money, more improving your business,
yeah.
right? So it's like if you're in this environment all the time, you just can't not win. Like yeah. the only thing you can do is win.
Yeah.
Right?
It's funny, you feel kind of lost when you don't have people like this
exactly.
around you. You're like, man, am I crazy?
Exactly.
Like, why aren't I talking about like drugs, drinking, and sports? Yeah. Everyone seems to be talking about those things and I have no interest in it.
Right.
Maybe I'm weird.
Yeah.
And then you get here around people who are talking about things that you have genuine interest in, and you're spitballing, you're growing together, talking about energy and business and structure. And it's like, wow, I'm like, I'm home. There's
yeah.
people like me out there, and it's a cool sensation.
It is. It really
but
is.
But something people have to be ready for when you're entering this world.
Yeah.
I've grown so far apart from people I went to high school with, it's not even funny.
Are you okay with that?
To a point, like we still make it a point every year to get together in Cape Cod for a week.
That's great.
Yeah, and I love them to death. And a lot of them are in the space. One other entrepreneur, and
yeah.
then one person in medicine, so we can kind of yeah. chat. The rest of them is just like, oh, you're pregnant. Awesome, you're getting married. I can't wait for the wedding. And it's just like a very different life. It's so interesting.
Do you think friendships are meant to last, or do you think each friendship serves its purpose in a specific point in time?
I don't think you should ever force a friendship to last. I think if there's a friend in your life and they are I don't want to say a drag, because that's not a good word, but they're not benefiting your life, they're not where you want to go, mm-hmm. then you should be able to dissociate yourself from that friendship as fast as possible.
Yeah.
So I think what holds a lot of people back are the wrong circles and spending too much time with the wrong people. So if
yeah.
that's you, you're better off alone, I think, than
yeah.
holding on to friendships that aren't serving you.
Yeah. And it's a really hard thing to do.
It's super hard.
It's really difficult.
Yeah, we're social beings. We get FOMO when our friends are all doing stuff. It's hard to say no. It's hard to walk away from that. But in the end, it's about you.
Yeah.
What are some tips that you have for people who are entering entrepreneurship? Resources that have really changed your life, books, mentors. What's guided you?
Good to Greats, been a book I've read recently. Really good. It's more about growing teams, and I'd say it's more for someone, you know, kind of already at that. If you're probably at that six-figure mark, if you're doing at least 10K a month, it's probably a great book. It'd probably be really helpful to help grow into seven figures and beyond and keep growing from there. Great book. Another one, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, 4-Hour Work Week. Really solid.
Those are my two intro into the world. Rich Dad, Poor Dad, 4-Hour Work Week. Yep.
Really good ones. Rocket Fuel. Rocket Fuel.
Keep hearing that one over and over again. I'll have to watch that.
Visionary and Integrators.
Yeah.
It's actually pairing the two. And this is actually helping people find other team members that work well with them.
Yeah. Right? It's super relevant too. I'm the visionary, Scott's the integrator, so I'm curious to see what he has to say about the nature of the relationship.
Yeah, for sure. And the last one is Ready, Fire, Aim. I think this is probably one of the most impactful books that I've ever read. Because, right, normally you ready, aim, and fire. But in this book, it's ready, fire, and then you aim after.
Interesting. Was that like, you got the idea, now we're going to sell it, and then we're going to aim?
And that's exactly what it is.
Very cool.
Because I think so many people get so stuck at either ready, before ready, or at aim. And they just aim their whole life. Mm-hmm. They talk about the success that they want. They talk about the business that they want. But they never fire. And because they never fire, they never win.
Yeah.
And the only way to actually win or succeed is to have fired and being okay if you didn't hit the target right on. I would rather shoot 100 times and maybe hit the target twice than to never have shot at all.
Yeah.
And I think so many people are afraid of how those 98 failures will feel that they sacrifice the two wins. And because of that, they're stuck in the same place for all of their life.
Yeah.
And that's the scariest thing.
A lot of people define entrepreneurs as risk takers. I think the number one defining feature of successful entrepreneurs is just relentless action, nonstop.
It is.
And then being able to get up after a failure and just take action again and again until something eventually sticks, because you're going to learn. You're going to have an idea that works.
It is.
All right, brother. It's 11 o'clock in France.
It is 11 o'clock.
Any final notes or tips for our entrepreneurs listening to this before our last night in Chamonix?
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, brother. This has been a blast. I'm glad we got to spend the week together.
Yeah.
Jam, and many more to come.
Many more to come. Where did you get this jacket? This is nice.
Oakley. I got it from a ski shop in Breckenridge.
Okay.
Last thing, where can people find you?
Are you a good skier?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I am. After this week, I'd say I'm okay.
Today was hard. I'm really fucking bad at skiing.
I heard today was hard.
It was tough.
Was your first day skiing today?
No, it was on Wednesday.
Yeah. By the second day, and this is my second ski trip ever. Second day of this trip, I was able to do blacks.
Really?
Yeah, I only fell once. I was pretty proud.
That's good. That's solid. Kikoa Mac on Instagram, Kikoa Macaulay on YouTube. We got a day in the life vlog launching tomorrow. Check it out. And we also got another Europe trip travel vlog going. How we traveled 4,007 miles to meet 41 strangers.
How you're heading to Copenhagen after this?
Headed to Copenhagen.
Benefits of an entrepreneur, guys.
Benefits of
he took 1 week off, and there he goes off to Copenhagen.
We're not off totally. We're still
we're not off. We're kind of working.
We're still running, but we're good. Yeah.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah.